Lois Beckett, I want to thank you for being with us. Senior reporter at The Guardian covering gun policy and the far right in the United States. We'll link to your piece, We Can't Let Fear Consume Us, Why Parkland Activists Won't Give Up. And that does it for today's broadcast. Today is the 201st birthday of Frederick Douglass. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting from Washington, speaking to the great-great-great-grandson of Frederick Douglass, Kenneth Morris, as well as the scholar Ibram X. Kendi. We'll be in Washington tonight at the Library of Congress for an event honoring Frederick Douglass. A very happy belated birthday to Brendan Allen. That does it for the show. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for a full-time, one-year paid news production fellowship. Go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grindle's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue, offering organic coffee, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 6 p.m. More information on the Grindle's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550. Up next is the KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. Most films will show at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, room 104 at PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland withdraws from the controversial JTTF.
The president says he'll declare a national emergency to build his wall.
And in international news, a national strike brings Belgium to a standstill.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, February 14th, 2019. I'm Jenny Yokoyama.
And I'm Annette Newell. President Trump plans to declare a national emergency so he can bypass Congress to build his long-promised wall along the border with Mexico. The White House says that today, that's his plan, even if he signs a spending bill from Congress that does not fund the wall. The New York Times says the announcement came just minutes before the Senate voted 83-16 to advance the spending package, expecting final passage tonight in the House. Trump's decision to sign it would end a two-month political war between the president and Congress fires that closed much of the federal government for a record 35 days and could have led to a second shutdown as soon as Friday. But it could spark a new constitutional clash over who controls federal spending. Oregon U.S. Senator Democrat Ron Wyden tweets his reaction, saying, quote, "The only national emergency here is the damage Trump's fragile ego is doing to the country," end of quote.
What do Oregon's refugees and immigrants think about President Trump's plan for a wall on the southern border and the message it sends? Well, KBOO's Annette Newell spoke with Ivan Abbas, an Iraqi citizen who took a long path to freedom in the United States and now lives in Hillsboro. She says she knows many people who also want to leave their countries and come to America.
A lot of friends, Syrian friends, Iraqi friends, they are asking me if I can find a way that they can just escape, because as I told you, it's your right to change your life, and it's really hard to tell them, well, this is not your right. You are taking them the right to change their life to the better for them and for their families, you know, because I will not leave a country if I am comfortable there and if I have everything. I will leave the country because I need something better than what I am having now. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Overall, I think the United States has gotten some criticism, though, lately, because especially with the current administration and our president talking about building a wall and not necessarily welcoming new people coming in. Did that play any role in your decision to come?
You know, I felt sorry for this decision, you know, because as I told you, like, don't judge the people and let them live their life in a safe, because a lot of people, they are just trying to escape from something bad to a better life. And always, like if a family, always they are thinking of their kids. They don't want them to be treated or to live the same life they did. So I feel it's right for everybody. And we don't need a walls. Really, we don't need. Because, you know, like, I felt like everybody have the right, as I told you. And also, like, if the people is trying to move for the better, let's help them to be better and to have the resources. We have the resources. It will be, sharing resources will be much better, I think. And you will not lose the resources when you have something and you are, you know, you're sharing these resources. And, you know, like, hopefully that it will be much better than before.
You can hear more of our interview with Ivana about her journey from refugee, cancer survivor, widow, mom of two, to her path towards American citizenship coming up later this hour on KBOO News In Depth.
The FBI has charged a Washington State man, 21-year-old Douglas Smizer, with interfering with a flight crew. Investigators accuse him of disturbing behavior on Campus Air Flight 6054 yesterday. Smizer, a Bonnie Lake man, boarded the flight at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. The flight bound for Los Angeles diverted to Portland International Airport when the crew became concerned about Smizer's actions. The plane landed at 7:51 in the night in Portland, and both Port of Portland police officers and the FBI responded. According to the federal criminal complaint filed in this case late today, witnesses and crew report there were multiple incidents that occurred between the time the plane left the gate in Seattle and when it landed in Portland. About 20 to 30 minutes into the flight, the captain says the crew became concerned that Smizer would rush the cockpit, and he decided to divert to Portland. Witnesses and crew reported that Smizer threw his backpack in the aisle and claimed it wasn't his, refused to stay in his seat, and paced the aisle with several attempts to move toward the front of the plane. A crew member also said that Smizer told her at one point that, quote, "someone has a gun in the back row of this plane." As the plane was approaching Portland for landing, a passenger helped return Smizer to his seat and used his own body to block Smizer from leaving his seat until port officers arrested him. Port officers charged Smizer with two state crimes, menacing and disorderly conduct. Today, the FBI filed the federal criminal complaint that adds a charge of interference with a flight crew. Smizer will appear before a federal magistrate at 1:30 p.m. tomorrow at the U.S. District Courthouse in Portland.
Hundreds of texts between the Portland police and Joey Gibson of right-wing group Patriot Prayer have been obtained by the Willamette Week newspaper. Texts between Portland Police Lieutenant Jeff Nia and the Vancouver-based Gibson reportedly show a, quote, friendly rapport. While it is not unusual for Portland police to communicate with protest groups, the Willamette Week has called into question some of the texts from Nia. According to the article, some of the text messages from Nia may have helped members of the Patriot Prayer group evade arrest. One particular exchange featured in the article focused on Gibson's fellow Patriot Prayer member, Tiny Tuese. In this exchange, Nia asked Gibson if Tuese has, quote, his court stuff taken care of, a reference to Tuese's active arrest warrant. There are questions if this exchange helped Tuese evade arrest during a 2017 protest. The text messages obtained by the Willamette Week were exchanged during police protests in 2017 and 2018.
Portland City Council members voted to withdraw from the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force last night in a vote of 3-2. The resolution was submitted by Commissioner Joanne Hardesty, who spoke at length during her campaign about the danger of JTTF to Portlanders, especially those of color. Millie Hobayesh, the daughter of Yemeni immigrants, provided stirring testimony during the hearing, making claims about the mistreatment and discrimination possible from the Joint Terrorism Task Force. Hobayesh said the JTTF raided her house, jailed her father, and isolated her family under 10 years of surveillance. The charges against her father were eventually thrown out, but the damage was lasting. Millie says, quote, it sowed a complete mistrust between the Muslim community and the city of Portland.
Portland Police announced extra patrols who will focus on impaired driving. In January, Portland Police arrested 86 people for alcohol and drug-impaired driving. So this month, they've added DUI enforcement patrols to help ensure the streets stay safe and to prevent needless tragedies. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, there is one alcohol-related fatality in the United States every 48 minutes. In 2017, there were 10,874 people killed in the United States as a result of these alcohol-related crashes. The Portland Police Bureau says drug-impaired driving is just as dangerous and illegal as alcohol-impaired driving. Officers will be taking a zero-tolerance approach to all forms of impaired driving.
Stabilizing what people pay for rent in Oregon. Is the movement to do that in Oregon's legislature going to work? The Public News Service's Eric Tegedoff takes a closer look at the measure that's now moving very quickly through Oregon's legislature.
A statewide measure to address the housing crisis is soaring through the Oregon legislature. The first-of-its-kind proposal would cap rent increases at no more than 7% plus the inflation rate per year and ban no-cause evictions for tenants who have lived in a building for a year. Annalisa Curler, public policy advocate for Oregon Food Bank, says the bill is moving quickly because lawmakers see the pressing need to address housing affordability. She says housing and hunger are intertwined issues.
So many of the people that we serve, people experiencing hunger, have to make that tough choice between rent and food. Do I make my rent payment this month, or do I put food on the table to feed my family? And so this measure will hopefully go a long way to making it so people don't have to make that tough choice.
About one quarter of renters spent more than half their income on rent in 2016, according to an Oregon Center for Public Policy study. At a hearing this week, two influential landlord groups, the Oregon Rental Housing Association and Rental Housing Alliance, said they were neutral on the bill. Opponents of the measure say it wasn't written with rural communities in mind and will decrease the number of affordable units in the state. Curler says folks at Oregon Food Bank's partner organizations in every part of the state have expressed concerns about housing prices, and many renters spoke to this at the hearing this week.
There were tenants that were there from across the state. There were a number from the Rogue Valley area who talked a lot about their experiences with huge rent increases and evictions. So I would say that has not been what we are seeing.
Under the bill, landlords who violate the law would be liable for 3 months' rent as well as the cost for damages. Properties less than 15 years old would be exempt from the rent increase cap. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Their minds. However, the FBI's Oregon office has this warning about romance scams.
We want to share a little love story with you. A love story gone very, very wrong. An older gentleman, looking for love, picks a pretty well-known dating website and starts the hunt. He finds what he believes to be a nice woman living in Africa. They text and chat online for months, falling hopelessly for each other. It's at this point that the girlfriend proposes. Not marriage, but a partnership. They can make some money while their love continues to grow. He agrees, and he helps by providing her with some seed money for their import-export business. Many romance scams end at this point, but unfortunately, this story continues on. Over time, the girlfriend asks him to set up multiple corporations in Oregon and open several dozen accounts at different banks. So-called customers would send the gentleman money, which he would manage and then wire out of the country per her instructions. Over the course of about 2 years, investigators believe the gentleman wired more than $1 million to bank accounts in Africa and China. So who were those customers? Turns out that they themselves were victims of romance scams. People from all over America thought they had found online love with U.S. military or government contractors living overseas. When they wired the older gentleman money, they thought they were sending it to their new girlfriends and boyfriends. How does this story end? Unfortunately, not well. Law enforcement officers found out about the scam and warned the gentleman that both the business and the girlfriend were phony. Love is a powerful motivator, though, and he continued to receive money from other victims and send it to fraudsters in other countries. In the end, the gentleman ended up pleading guilty to wire fraud and money laundering, and now must pay more than $200,000 in restitution. So how do you keep Cupid on the up and up? Here are a few warning signs to watch for. Your new beau presses you to leave a dating website where you met to communicate solely through email or instant messaging. She sends you a photo that looks like a glamour shot out of a magazine. He professes love quickly and tries to isolate you from friends and family. She claims to be working and living far away, whether that's on the other side of the country or overseas. He makes plans to visit you but always has to cancel because of some emergency. She asks for money or your help moving money. If you have been victimized by this scam or any other online scam, report it to the FBI. You can file an online report at the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center at www.ic3.gov.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. You can stay tuned after this newscast. We have an in-depth report coming up tonight. The inspiring story of an immigrant from Kuwait who made a new life for herself and her family in Hillsboro, Oregon. She's among several immigrants whose stories and pictures are on display right now at the Hillsboro City Hall through April, thanks to the efforts of the Immigrant Story Charity. At 6 o'clock, we've got Rose City Native Radio coming your way. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, steady light rain continuing this evening, showers continuing overnight too, a low down to 39 degrees. Winds south-southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Our chance of rain, 70%. And tomorrow's weather for Friday, cloudy with occasional rain showers, thunder possible, high 48 degrees, wind south at 10 to 15 miles per hour, and our chance of rain tomorrow at 50%. And today in Black history, Frederick Douglass, abolitionist, was born in 1817. Also in Black history, Morehouse College was founded on this day in Atlanta in 1867. Our quote of the day is from Frederick Douglass, who said, quote, "I didn't know I was a slave until I found out I couldn't do the things I wanted. The thing worse than rebellion is the thing that causes rebellion."
Amazon has announced it will end plans to build a headquarters in the state of New York. In November, the trillion-dollar company faced immense backlash upon announcing their intention to open a headquarters in Queens. In a mix of grassroots organizing and opposition from local and state leaders, objection to the headquarters became widespread in the months following their HQ2 announcement. Citing the magnitude of opposition to the HQ2 plans, Amazon released a statement this morning announcing the project's cancellation, although they have no plans to end their expansion in Northern Virginia and Nashville.
We're hearing more about this one. The controversy continues about Catholic students' clash with a Native American elder. With today's report from National Native News, here's Megan Kamrick.
Some Native leaders are pushing back against a report that claims to exonerate Catholic high school students involved in a high-profile confrontation last month during a rally on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. The report was prepared by a detective agency hired by a law firm on behalf of the Catholic Diocese of Covington. Diocese leaders say the report's conclusions clear the students of making any offensive or racist statements. The report's authors talked to Covington Catholic high school students and chaperones and reviewed video footage footage of the incident. Lance Gums, a member of the Council of Trustees for the Shinnecock Indian Nation in New York, dismisses the report as laughable. Gums witnessed the confrontation firsthand and says the students, teachers, and third-party investigators fail to comprehend the extent of disrespect directed at Omaha elder Nathan Phillips as he sang and drummed at the rally.
Now, I think that what would behoove the Catholic Church is to sit down with, you know, a group of the indigenous people that were there to discuss what transpired and how to build a better bridge, how to understand a different culture and what, you know, that meant to us to have that young man stand in the way of an elder.
The report investigators tried to talk to Phillips, but said they did not get a response. They did acknowledge that the students performed a tomahawk chop motion with their arms and joined in with Phillips as he chanted. In a letter to school parents, Diocese Bishop Roger Foyes says the students' reaction to the situation was, quote, expected and one might even say laudatory. A Southeast Alaska tribe has taken the initial steps to begin creating its own tribal court. KNBA's Trip Krause talks with the tribe's executive director about how two grants will help.
Yakutat Tlingit Tribe recently was awarded two grants totaling a little over $1 million to start their own tribal court system. The tribe's executive director, Nathan Moulton, says it's a demonstration of the tribe's self-determination.
You know, we're creating a judicial branch within our tribal government, and it's a huge step towards demonstrating that we are, in fact, a legitimate government.
Moulton says Yakutat Tlingit worked with the tribal court system at Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska.
We've decided to create a partnership agreement with Tlingit Haida Tribal Courts initially to come in and set up a satellite court in Yakutat where the Yakutat Tlingit Tribe would adopt the law and order codes from Tlingit and Haida Tribal Court.
Moulton says the Yakutat Tribal Court system will go a long way for support of crime victims and the perpetrators of the crime, something he thinks is different from the state or federal court system.
Because many times what you see in state courts or, you know, even federal courts, the perpetrator never gets rehabilitated. And so what we're going to be able to get some low-level criminal offenses into tribal court, and we're able to place more of a focus on rehabilitation and more of a focus on crime victims and serving both populations.
Moulton says as the tribe's court system grows, it'll be able to develop its own judges and contract out more specialized positions the tribe can't source locally. In Anchorage, I'm Trip Krause.
The Cherokee Nation has received a federal grant for up to $6 million for those impacted by opioid abuse. The tribe announced the Department of Labor Dislocated Worker Grant is for $2 million initially. It will help place 50 people in Cherokee Nation Behavioral Health to help expand opioid-related treatment services. It will also help fund training for 250 participants for jobs in healthcare, manufacturing, hospitality, and construction. The Cherokee Nation has filed lawsuits against retail distributors and manufacturers of opioids. The suits argue marketing by manufacturers led to vast overprescribing and distribution of opioids on the Cherokee Nation. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
The House has voted to end U.S. military assistance for Saudi Arabia's war on Yemen. Trump may veto the resolution, though objection to Saudi practices in Yemen have become bipartisan. Saudi human rights abuses were aired on the international scene in November when news of journalist Jamal Khashoggi's brutal murder at a Saudi consulate was broken by The Washington Post. Saudi Arabia's war in Yemen has reportedly killed over 60,000 civilians, many of them from airstrikes conducted with U.S.-made missiles. The resolution to end U.S. military assistance drew on the 1973 Wars Powers Act, which gives Congress the ability to halt U.S. involvement in armed conflicts.
The FBI has now opened an investigation into a fire at a Planned Parenthood in Missouri. A man wearing dark clothing was seen leaving the clinic parking lot shortly after 4 a.m. as smoke billowed from the building. There were no injuries, though there was damage to the building, one of only two clinics offering abortion services in the state and the only clinic for the city of St. Louis. The FBI is investigating the fire as a federal civil rights violation.
A national strike drew Belgium to a standstill yesterday. The strike over pay and working conditions began with the country's three main workers' unions, which have more than 4 million workers as members. By the end of the day, government workers had joined in too. The substantial reach of Wednesday's strike brought virtually all job sectors of Belgium to a standstill. All flights were canceled, schools closed, and the country's transit system also came to a halt, with half the country's trains suspended. Robert Ventinol, president of a major socialist trade union involved in the strike, explained that it was meant to send a signal to employers. He hoped not only for better compensation, but for fair compensation. The national strike ended last night at 10 p.m.
Well, some things are going well in the world, so we have one happy story for you right now. A recently retired Oregon man won the top prize of the Win for Life game. He's going to take home a cool $1,000 per week for the rest of his life. Robert East of Fairview can thank his Oregon Lottery win. He matched all four numbers for the Monday, February 11th drawing. He bought that winning ticket at CJ's Pub on Sandy Boulevard in Portland. He says he is a regular player of the lottery jackpot games, and he was very surprised when he realized he had won. "I was at home and Googled the results from my phone," he said. "I looked at the ticket again, checked the date, and then double-checked it. Then I immediately called my best friend." He says he stopped by the store and scanned the ticket just to be sure, and he confirmed it was the winning ticket. "I recently retired, so this is going to help me relax in retirement," he said. "I have limited income, so this will make me more comfortable." And CJ's Pub ends up being a winner, too. It's going to receive a retailer sales bonus of $13,000 for selling the winning ticket. Chris Taylor, the owner of CJ's Pub, says that bonus money will be going back into the business. "We need some heating and air conditioning work, and we're going to get some new chairs," Taylor says, "continuing to grow our business." Since 1985, Oregon Lottery players have won more than $38 billion worth of prizes. So, happy retirement.
Wow.
That's wonderful.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, February 14th, 2019. Here are the main headlines again. President Trump is promising to call for a national emergency to build his wall on the Mexican border, setting up a possible constitutional clash over who controls the purse strings in Washington. Portland withdraws from the JTTF, and in international news, a national strike brings Belgium to a standstill. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Jenna Yokoyama, Annette Newell, Emily Gresham Beamer, and Janka Soderberg. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Evan West. The director of the Evening News and Public Affairs is Rachel Hartley. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Jenny Yokoyama.
And I'm Annette Newell. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 9, on Positively Revolting Talk Radio, host Ani Haynes takes your calls. At 10, it's Veterans Voices with Marvin Simmons. And then at 10 on Valley View's, host Dale Holliday shares her observations about being a woman who is child-free by choice. This is part 2 of a 2-part series. At 10:15, we'll bring you Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Pacific Underground, Pacific interviews Duncan Ryken Williams, author of American Sutra, a story of faith and freedom in the Second World War. Williams is going to be in town for a reading of his book on Friday. Then at 11:30, we'll bring you the Laura Flanders Show. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. So to become a member, we invite you to go to kboo.fm and click on the button marked Donate. Good night, Jenna.
Good night, night. Night.
Night, Evan.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
A display of photos and stories hangs at the City Hall in Hillsborough. Among them is a remarkable story of perseverance and the will to survive. It's about an Iraqi citizen born in Kuwait. She survived discrimination, hardship, her husband's death from cancer, and her own fight against the disease. KBOO's Annette Newell talked to Ivana Boz about the journey she's taken to her new life in Hillsborough.
I just moved to Hillsborough October 2018.
Tell me a little bit about your story, what you went through. You underwent a lot of discrimination and problems, it sounds like, over the years.
Yes. Well, I born in Kuwait, and my father from Iraq. So in Kuwait, they don't have the rule that you will get your citizenship when you are born there. So I've been always treated like different than the people, because I don't carry the citizenship there. And this thing has also changed my career, because I've been always trying to go to the medical college, and they didn't allow me because they said it's only for citizenship. So they gave me only like the options to go for other college. So I went to the science college because I was like, you know, interested in the science and math and everything. And yeah, I lived all my life there, and it was like really hard to feel that you've been discriminated because of something you didn't do anything about. So I said, well, I don't want my kid to stay there and to live the same life I lived. So I tried to immigrate more than one time, and finally I am here.
Why did you end up having to go to Kuwait?
My father, he was from Iraq, but he moved with his family when he was 2 years to Kuwait to have like a job and everything. So my father was there from when he was 2 years, and now my father is 70 years, and he get married there, and he lived all his life there. So I didn't see Iraq. I have only the nationality, but I'm not from, I cannot feel that it's my home, you know? Yeah, so this is the thing, yeah.
Yeah. So you come to America. How did that happen?
Okay, so I applied through the United Nations, and I filed a file for me, my husband, and my two kids. And the United Nations asked me, well, in Kuwait, there is no war, everything is stable, why you are trying to immigrate? Then I said, well, because of the discrimination here, plus my husband, he is diagnosed with a cancer, so I didn't get them, you know, the funds to give him all the treatment he would like. So it was like through the charities or like, you know, donation and everything. So I told the United Nations, like, maybe he can get better medical health there in the United States. So this was our goal, the first thing. But, you know, he didn't make it. So before they gave me the approval, the approval was in September, and my husband passed away on May. So it's 4 months before that, you know. So you didn't know. And I was afraid because, you know, like when I talked to United Nations, I told them, well, my husband has passed away. Does this mean that my file is closed because we are going as a family? He said, no, the file is in your name. So you will continue the immigration and everything. Yeah.
Okay, so you came here then with your two children. And you're here in America. Where did you land?
My first thing, like the Catholic Charity, they welcomed me from the airport to my sister's house here. My sister is already U.S. citizen, and she moved here 2003, so she since long time. So I stayed with her for 1 month, then I rented my apartment, and I continue my life.
Okay, yeah. So what do you think so far of life in America?
Well, in my case, like, I love how the people is treating me, and they are treating me very well. They are not discriminating me, and this is why I was moved from Kuwait, which I born there. And they are trying to help me here, and they are trying to give me the resources. And this is why I try to go back and give the community, or try to go to a job that I can give them back. And now I am employment specialist with the state to help the people to get jobs, to get resources, because I like the way that somebody give me a hand. So I would like to give back the hand. Yes, yeah.
So you ended up getting a job pretty quickly.
Yes, yes. Well, I've been with the DHS because I was SNAP recipient. So they put me in a program called work experience. Then my manager, she felt, well, Iman, you have the good skills, and you have so maybe I will give you a temp position. I said, yeah, sure. So she offered me a temp position. Then this temp position ended because there's no fund for the program. So I've been laid off. And the appointment for my unemployment, the staff there, he told me, are you interested to work here on a temp position? Then I said, oh, yeah. Then they put me in a temp position, and I applied for the limited duration, and now I am limited duration there.
I saw that some of your education was in the medical field, too, right?
Well, this is what was my goal, that to go for a medical college. But because of my nationality, they didn't allow me. They told me, because you are non-citizen, so you cannot go for medical college. You need to select other colleges, you know. Then I selected the science college.
Okay, so what kind of a degree did you end up getting?
I have a bachelor's degree in computer science, and my minor is accounting.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Do you hope to maybe further your education here in the States now that you're here?
Well, I was really, you know, my goal was to take care of my kids because, you know, as a single mom. So, and it's different culture here, different language for the kids. So I said, maybe later on, if I am a little bit free, which I'm not, I'm always busy, you know, full-time working and taking care of the kids, taking care of your life. So it was not. But if I have the chance, I will go back to get my master's degree in education, higher education. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Well, yes. What kind of dreams do you have for your family in the future, especially with having children? You must think about what their life is going to be like.
Well, you know, I don't want that much. I would like only them to be treated very well, and they can find it here. Now I have my own house, and I have my own job. I have my own car, so I think I am good. I don't need anything more. And because, you know, like even in my work, they are treating me very well. So I felt like I have everything now. And maybe I am telling also my back home, my friends, that I achieved in this 3 years or 4 years I'm here in the state more than my entire 35 years in Kuwait.
Mm, yes. That's amazing. You know, I just went and saw your beautiful picture. It was right outside Hillsborough City Hall, the Civic Center. What does it make you think when you go and you see that your picture is there?
You know, I was first when Sankar told me that, okay, we will take your picture. Then I said, well, I don't have that much to say about my life. But he told me, no, you have something. And he convinced me. Then I said, okay, so when I'm going and the people will say, oh, I saw your picture in, because it was in Beaverton before. So I saw a picture of this. And you are really a strong woman because you've been all this. I said, because, you know, when you have a goal in your life and you are trying to reach your goal, mm-hmm. this is what will give you the power to move on and just move on and ignore all the barriers you have and just move on to reach your goal. And I reached my goal here.
And you have a Muslim faith.
Yes, I am.
Do you feel that Americans are open and welcoming to people of the Muslim faith?
Well, at the beginning, like, you know, the first impression when somebody look at me, especially with my hijab, they will have this reaction, but especially, like, say, in my job. But when I'm giving them the services and they are, you know, like dealing with me and they feel like, well, I can help them, then the entire idea will be changed because, you know, we are dealing with people like, you know, the help. I don't care about your faith, your color. The most important thing that you are dealing with me in respect and you are giving me the help I need. So this is the most important thing for the people. So now everybody, like even my customers sometimes coming and calling me by name. They need my services, you know. And I really feel proud that I am giving the community something that they gave me before.
What message do you hope that the city council members take away?
The only message I will feel that thank you for having us. Thank you for giving us the chance to change our life. It's not easy to change your life, especially with different culture, different language, different faith. But giving us the chance to start a new life and giving my kids is a new life that I am really, hopefully, that they will get better than what I get. This is the thank you message I would like to give them back, yes.
And you've been in the United States and in Oregon for how long now?
From September 2015 until today.
Okay, so just a couple of years.
Yes.
And such an incredible change. Was
yes.
it hard to leave your friends and family members behind?
It was really hard, but as I told you, it was my goal. I thought like, okay, you need to select either or. So either your coming life with your kids and something you are really going for, or to stay where you are and just suffering from the discrimination there. And this is why it gave me the power to move on. Yes.
So you came here to escape. You came to the United States to escape discrimination.
Yes.
And
yes.
Have you found that it's lived up to that expectation?
Yes, yes. This is my main goal, to escape from discrimination, because I felt it's unfair to discriminate some people because of their color or faith or whatever, or because they didn't born here. Everybody has the right to change their life to the better thing, especially like, you know, if they are a good citizen or good people, so why not? This is the thing. Yeah.
Do you know a lot of people who you've left behind in your former countries that are really still suffering that
yes.
that could benefit?
Yes.
From
a lot of people, like in my country, especially like, you know, my own family, my sisters there and my brothers there, they tried, and it's now more hard than before. So like my two sister theirs and my brothers, they are trying, but they didn't manage to do that. Also my friends, so a lot of friends, Syrian friends, Iraqi friends, they are asking me if I can find a way that they can just escape, because as I told you, it's your right to change your life, and it's really hard to tell them, well, this is not your right. You are taking them the right to change their life to the better for them and for their families, you know. Because I will not leave a country if I am comfortable there and if I have everything. I will leave the country because I need something better than what I am having now. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Overall, I think that the United States has gotten some criticism, though, lately, because especially with the current administration and our president talking about building a wall and not necessarily welcoming new people coming in. Did that play any role in your decision to come?
You know, I felt sorry for this decision, you know, because as I told you, like, don't judge the people and let them live their life in a safe, because a lot of people, they are just trying to escape from something bad to a better life. And always, like if a family, always they are thinking of their kids. They don't want them to be treated or to live the same life they did. So I feel it's right for everybody. And we don't need a walls. Really, we don't need. Because, you know, like, I felt like everybody have the right, as I told you. And also, like, if the people is trying to move for the better, let's help them to be better and to have the resources. We have the resources. It will be, sharing resources will be much better, I mm-hmm. think. And you will not lose the resources when you have something and you are, you know, sharing these resources. And, you know, like, hopefully that it will be much better than before. Yeah.
You mentioned, you know, some folks from Syria.
Yes.
Horrible war
yes.
crimes have been going on there, as well as Afghanistan.
Yes.
In over a decade now, I think,
yeah.
that war's been going on. And then Yemen. I mean,
Yemen.
All these people yes. are just in a really dire situation.
Yes. There, and they are suffering, and they felt sorry for them, because I can't do anything for them. I hope that I can do something for them, because really, when I came here and I reached the United States they told me that we are already now here, I felt that my dream comes true. And now I can, you know, it's how the bird, when you lock him in a cage or or in a thing, then you are just giving him the chance to go away and to go and fly. This is the much better thing, and I felt really happy. I didn't feel sorry that I came here, and I feel like my coming days will be much better than the before one. Yes.
Let's talk about your children, if you don't mind. Yeah, how sure. old are your kids?
I have Omar, he is 13 years right now. March 1st, he will be 13. I have Ahmed, he is 10 years old. And they are in third grade and seventh grade here in Hillsboro Schools. And they are really happy that we have our own house now through Habitat for Humanity. So I just bought a house through the Habitat for Humanity. So they are really happy with the community here and the resources here. Yeah.
Did the other children, were they accepting of your kids?
Yes, yes. I didn't feel that my kids came back and they told me, well, somebody is talk to me bad or something. No, I didn't feel that, yes. And because, you know, my kids already in Kuwait, they were in private school, so they already have some language, especially even if it is not the same accent, but they have the same language. So I didn't feel that they have difficulties with school. Yes, no, yeah.
How many languages do you and your children speak?
So my older Umar, he speaks Arabic, English, and Spanish now, and younger, he's Arabic and English. Okay. Yes.
And what were some of the big differences in the culture here compared to what you were used to?
Yeah. Maybe the most difficult thing, or it's not difficult, it's different, I mean. Like here in the schools, so in Kuwait we have schools for girls, school for boys. Then in the college, there will be for girls and boys. Here it's now from the elementary or from the beginning you have the... So this is different. I don't think that other thing is different. Maybe the weather. The weather is totally different. Yes. I didn't feel that much differences, really. Yeah, yeah, no, nothing. Maybe also, yeah, maybe the family-oriented thing. So back home, we have the family gathering every week. I didn't find it here in the United States. Also back home, we have the neighbors. So like we are sharing food, sharing everything with the neighbors. Here I feel everybody is like with their own life. So the social thing, I didn't find. And everybody's busy here. We are also working in Kuwait, but we are socializing. So maybe this is also different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You said you had a sister here, though.
Yes.
Yeah, so you
yes.
have some family.
Yes.
You have some family connections. Did that make things easier for you?
Yes. But, you know, I feel like even she is, like, working and she has her own kids, family. So also she's busy. So, like, every week we are trying to gather for a dinner or go out to the kids, like, have some activities. Yeah. But she's also busy.
You feel like your children are thriving in school here and in
yes.
the community. What would their life have been? How would it have been different if you had stayed in Kuwait?
The difference thing, I feel they will not get the same level of the education. Kuwait is very like rich country, but you know, as I told you, it's for the citizenship, for the citizen, I mean. For the non-citizen, you will be in the private school, and the private school, the more level of the private school, the more expensive. So I didn't put them in the higher level of the school. I put them the regular, which I can afford it. So the education was not that good like here. Also the health, it's not the same like here, I felt. So this is the most important two things, which is the health and education. It's different, totally different.
So they wouldn't have been able to live up to their potential with their education,
yes.
and they would not have had as good a health care.
Yes, right? Yes, yes. Because, yeah. you know, like as I told you, if you are a non-citizen there, you will pay for all the services. And the higher level you are going to take the service, the money will be more expensive for you. And if you cannot afford it, then you cannot do it. Mm-hmm. Here, no, like under the 21 years, I think they can be, if this low income family, then they will be covered from Oregon Health Plan, which is really I appreciate this program. And also the SNAP, because they helped me the first year, they helped me a lot, the DHS through DHS, and all the resources, this resources which helped me now to be where I am now, I will not find it back at home in Kuwait, yes.
At home, do you think that people have this idea that America is a land of opportunity that welcomes people?
Yes, I felt yes. Before, everybody was trying, but now with the new, president, it is not the same like before. Like, everybody will say, well, even if I applied and I would like to have better life, they will not accept my papers. And I feel like a lot of people, they are saying our files is still waiting for approval and all this thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes.
What would you tell the president if he were here about his Muslim ban?
Well, I will tell him Muslim, like non-Muslim, we are all human and we are all, you know, our main goal is to live our life in peace and love and help each other, because this is the life everybody would like to have it. You don't want to live in a discrimination. You don't want to live in hate. You don't want to live like everybody by their own life. If we help each other and we love each other, regardless of our color or our faith or our whatever, all this, it will be much better life for us, for everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really like, as I told you, like sharing resources, you will not lose the resource, because I will give you something and you will give me something, so everybody will have the resources.
Have you found a community or a mosque for people who basically you can lean on for support here?
During the week, I cannot go anywhere because, you know, as a full-time position. But during the holy month, the Ramadan, yes, we are gathering in different masjid here. So we have, and we will share food sometimes, share some activities, engagement sometimes, graduation. So yeah, so I find like, and also like if I need the resources, I can ask them and they can ask me. So it's like also sharing resources. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Have you met other folks who have moved from Kuwait to here?
No, I didn't. Everybody's moving from maybe Syria, Iraq, but not Kuwait, because as I told you, everybody has the idea that Kuwait is a rich country, yeah. So nobody would like to immigrate, but they didn't know that well, because if you're born there and you are not citizen, you will have no resources. So you need sometimes to change your life.
Yeah. Is there any effort to change that in Kuwait? No,
I don't think so. Yeah. Like, you know, like even they tried, like in the United Arab Emirates, they try that if your mother is Emirati, then you can get the nationality through your mother. In Kuwait, it's too difficult for this thing. So I felt like they have like you know, the eligibility thing. It's too difficult. So not everybody can be eligible for this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's too difficult.
Yeah. In Saudi Arabia, up until recently, they were very strict about not even letting women drive cars.
We don't have this in Kuwait. No. Yeah. In Kuwait, we are more open country. The woman can work, can study, can drive, can do everything. Yes, it's different Kuwait from Saudi Arabia. Yes,
but is the situation for women in general in the Middle East more difficult than it is here? Are American women more free to pursue opportunities than they would be there?
Well, you know, like in my case, I didn't feel that anybody say to me no. Like even as I told you, my first job was in a Volvo company and I was a programmer there. I was the only woman there. And, you know, I traveled 2-3 times like a business trip, and I didn't have any restriction that because if you are a woman. It is true they will prefer, let's say, if you are like my sister, she's a civil engineer, they will prefer a man on a woman to be a civil engineer to be in the field. It is true. They will have this discrimination for the sex. But I mean, otherwise, in Kuwait, we have all the opportunities to do whatever we would like to do. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do women still get paid less there than men for the same job, though?
Well, and I cannot say yes or no. Why? Because in my case, because I am non-citizen, so I've been taking the woman, which is a Kuwaiti woman, as a salary, and I didn't say anything about it because I cannot say anything about it, you know, like, and it was unfair for me because I'm working the same hours, everything, all the duties, and I'm getting the third of her salary. But when you let anybody know about this thing, they said, oh, you are non-citizen and she is a citizen, and this is unfair. And this is why I'm saying it will give something like for hate. It will start something like in hate. And you don't want to start hate. The people is hating each other because of the resources they have. So I felt when you have the equal thing for everybody, and everybody will be happy, everybody will be satisfied, so you will not have the chances that somebody's hating you because of the resources you have.
If people want to learn more about your story and about other immigrants, what should they do?
Well, I think maybe they can stop anybody in the street and ask them like in a polite way, can I ask you about why you are here or something? And when I feel like you would like only for the knowledge thing, I will be open to tell you whatever you would like to know, you know. But sometimes the people is approaching you and I didn't face this. Thanks God. Yeah, so some reach you like in like, you know, a hate look or something, or because you are different. I am not different, you know. It's the hijab will not make me different, and my faith is not affecting you in anything, you know. So this is the thing. So yeah, I am open to anybody who would like to ask me anything about my life, because, you know, I feel like I'm proud of what I'm doing now, and I don't have anything to hide in my other life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like you are one of the lucky ones. There's
yes,
so many other folks who are trying to come and escape really bad conditions right now.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like I'm lucky, because even like, reaching what I reach now, not a lot of people reach this within the period they are here in the United States. Yes.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything else that I haven't asked you that you think people should know?
The only thing that don't make other people's life more difficult, because they already have the difficulties they have in their life. Let's try to make everybody live the life they would like to have it, because this is their right, you know. And let's make life like without hate, with love, with peace, because this is what we need. We don't want to raise our kids with hate. We need them to feel that everybody's equal, everybody's the same. Don't judge the people and just live your life.
Yeah.
And be a good citizen.
And people who are, you know, Americans, there are some who say that immigrants are taking away our jobs.
I know.
And what would your response be to that?
Well, I will say no, because like in my faith, like everybody has their own job, and nobody will take any other people's job or, you know, like a business or anything. Because as I told you, like sharing, it will be more resources for everybody. And in my faith, everybody has their own, like we said, like God, they wrote for them that this is your life, this is your money, or this is your health, everything. So I will not take anything from you, I'm sure for that. And everybody will take what God meant for them. I have my green card, and okay. 2020 I can apply for citizenship, and there will be a citizenship.
Is that what you want to do?
Yes. So this is my goal. And if you ask me why, what is the difference to be a citizenship and non-citizenship, I will tell you something that back home in Kuwait with my Iraqi passport, when I apply for any country, they will refuse my visit visa or my tourist visa. Why is that? Because they know Iraqi, they have war, so they don't have country, so your intention will be immigrate. But if I have a U.S. citizen, nobody will think a U.S. citizen will immigrate to anywhere. So they will allow me to travel, they will allow me to go, because I love traveling. And they will allow me to do that freely, and this is the only thing I feel, because now everybody is treating me very well, and they didn't think that I am different than any citizen. I have my job, I have my home and everything, yeah. Same like other citizens.
But to become an American citizen, do you have to renounce your Iraqi citizenship, or can you be dual?
I think you can be dual, but you know something, like the only thing I'm caring now to have my U.S. citizen, because it will give me more better life, maybe in front of other people. Because as I told you, they will not treat you as an Iraqi passport. They will treat you as a U.S. passport. Living in discrimination, it's really hard. You will feel like, you know, always like uncomfortable, and you will feel like, why is this? You will have a lot of whys, and you don't have the answer for whys. Yes, to discriminate people is really something like really bad, and like, you know, you will have like giving them the hate to start. and you don't want this.
Especially with kids.
Yes.
They pick up on that,
yes,
don't they?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And they can feel that now I am much, like, more happy because, like, I reached my goal and I'm living here and everybody is loving me and I love everybody.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you're here in Oregon.
Thank you so much. I'm glad also.
Wonderful talking
Thank
to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was KBOO's Annette Newell talking to Ivana Boz, an immigrant whose story is among those highlighted in photos and pictures at the Hillsborough City Hall through April. You can find out more about immigrants and refugees in our community on the Immigrant Stories website. And you are tuning in to KBOO 90.7. Up next is Rose City Native.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the second annual Dance and Resist, Thursday, February 14th at 10 p.m. at Open Signal, Portland Community Media Center. Dance and Resist is Portland's only activist-led live television dance party. For Crying Out Meow Productions is proud to welcome back host and activist Kat Meow Garcia, joined this time by musician DJ Vicky for a night of resistance. Dance and Resist practices reclaiming community space through dance and revolutionary education. There will be a green screen photo booth and costumes are highly encouraged. Again, that's Dance and Resist too. Thursday, February 14th at 10 p.m. till midnight at Open Signal, 2766 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Songs of Strength and Courage on Sunday, February 17th from 3 to 5:30 p.m. at the Central Lutheran Church in Portland. The Portland Peace Choir is hosting this year's Joint Peace Choir Concert with Eugene Peace Choir, Inaccord Community Choir, Rogue Valley Peace Choir, and special guests, One World Chorus with Aaron Nigel Smith. Again, that's Songs of Strength and Courage on Sunday, February 17th from 3 to 5:30 p.m. at the Central Lutheran Church, 1820 Northeast 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Trillium Public Charter School in North Portland. Enrollment for the 2019 to 2020 school year is now open for students K through 12 with an open house on February 21st at 6:30 p.m. More information online at trilliumcharterschool.org.
You are listening to a digital indigenous radio show. All across Turtle Island, turn up!